Hello, this is Monocle Reads. I'm Georgina Godwin. My guest today is Ryan Gatiss. He's 41. He comes from Los Angeles. He's an award-winning writer. He's been a previous guest on Meet the Writers here on Monocle 24, and you can find our full interview in the archive. But he was such an interesting guest that we felt we had to get him back. And one of the reasons we needed to get him back was that, Ryan, last time we spoke, you were an artistic work in progress.
Oh, dear. Yes, that's true.
And now it's completed.
It's completed. It's taken 4 years.
So we're talking here about your tattoo.
Correct. It's only one now. It used to be bits and pieces. I have a full back piece that connects to two front pieces as well as both sleeves. And it's part of Chris Brand's 108 Tattooed Warriors series. And currently, various photographs of it are touring the world in various museum exhibitions.
That's so interesting. What does your tattoo depict?
Well, it depicts his adaptation of an ancient Chinese novel called The Water Margin, which arguably is one of the very first novels ever written. It's about 1,000 years old, and it's about these tattooed warriors who come together to fight corruption in the government.
Now, fighting corruption and the government is something that's a bit of a theme in your life, because your breakthrough book was the story of the 1992 riots in Los Angeles, all about the human cost of the protests. It was called All Involved.
Yes. It caused a little bit of a stir for one of the reasons why, and I was a little bit mystified because it's a fact, was that there are gangs within the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department. And now these gangs had been found by a federal judge to have done everything from attacking citizens, racial menace, shootings, and the city of Los Angeles had to pay, I hesitate to give you the number because it's a little fuzzy in my brain, but it was an enormous amount of money, millions of dollars, to settle these cases.
Yeah, and I mean, it was a very big book. And as I say, you won many awards, were put up for many others. And it's also sparked your work in prisons.
It has, yes. I'm a prison writing mentor with PEN America now, and one of my recent mentees won the Edward Bunker Award for prison writing. One of the things that I'm really passionate about is providing opportunities for more voices from backgrounds that might not otherwise be published. So it's a really unique and occasionally difficult job, but it's not something that everyone is fit for. However, due to my previous research, I feel like it's something that I'm meant to do.
And your previous research, of course, took you right into the heart of these gangs.
Yes, absolutely. I hit an anniversary recently. I've been doing research in South Central Los Angeles for a decade now. That snuck up on me. Someone just said, oh, hey, you know, you've been around for 10 years. I just went, oh my gosh, it doesn't feel like it at all. But I suppose in 2009, I met a number of former gang members and was kind of, I guess, sufficiently impressed them to be passed on to someone who was the boss in the 90s. And he was able to say whether or not I would be able to continue to do this research, specifically with Latino gangs, which is absolutely a group that has a code of silence. You know, they don't speak about how their business is run. And as a result, most people have almost no idea. So to be given this kind of, well, this nod, you know, that I was able to, you know, talk about this world, I view it as almost sacred. You know, I have to be as respectful as possible, you know, to the subculture and the people who in many ways have died within it.
Mm. Is there a danger that you're allied with one particular gang and that puts you at risk from any kind of attack from another?
Well, only insofar as it's, you know, Los Angeles is still divided as into neighborhoods. So the good news is this, I've never once written about any specific gang in any of my work. You know, if you read All Involved or you read Safe, you'll see that I almost purposely leave out the names of gangs. And I think that's really important, not just from a safety perspective, but also because I'd like to think that, you know, it's far more universal. If people are more able to see themselves in it, you know, I don't need to give specifics about things, but it's allowed me to go all over. In fact, I've been up in Highland Park, which is far north of Linwood. It's in northeast Los Angeles. Been around quite a bit. And recently, actually, I was doing work on gangs in Shreveport, Louisiana. So it's starting to take me very interesting new places.
And I'm guessing that the gangs there in Louisiana are completely different from Los Angeles.
Yes and no. Because in the 80s, the Bloods and Crips did something called franchising. and they sent groups out across the United States to open essentially small shops. And this was everywhere from Missouri to Louisiana, Colorado, where I'm from. And the other interesting thing, of course, is that there's a very long history of human migration between that part of northern Louisiana, eastern Texas, and Los Angeles in particular. In fact, the founder of the Crips, Stanley Tukey Williams, is originally from Shreveport, Louisiana.
Mm-hmm. You talk about being deeply respectful of the gangs, and obviously you've got to work within their code of silence. But the bottom line has got to be, surely, they are criminals.
Yes. I mean, those who have participated in criminal actions are indeed criminals, especially as far as the law is concerned. And one of the reasons why I think people speak to me is because I make it incredibly clear, look, I don't write nonfiction. I'm not here to tell your story. I'm looking for general background, and I want some really deep research that will allow me to construct a story that will work within this world, will tell, you know, a great deal about this world, certainly its codes, its honor, its passions, to those who are not familiar with it. And yet, at the same time, you know, it's tremendously important to share these stories about a hidden Los Angeles, you know, the Los Angeles that no one speaks about. Mm. I just feel like it's vital to just show the diversity that I love.
Your last book, Safe, now that is really, it's a Robin Hood tale about a former junkie turned drug enforcement administrator, a safe cracker who steals from gangs to give to those hurt by the 2008 financial crisis. Tell us more about that.
Yes, I think you nailed it. I mean, it's absolutely a Robin Hood story. You have a guy who, you know, yes, he works for the DEA, he works for the FBI. He steadfastly says, you know, I'm freelance, I get to do what I want, because he has a very specific skill set, which allows him to freelance for all these different agencies. Yet when something comes up in his own life and he realizes that time is running out, he makes a very real decision. You know, I'm going to start stealing from these safes. And he happens to come across the absolute wrong safe. And, you know, the gangs send what's essentially termed a hunter after him to find him. And it's very interesting because I was actually researching another book, but I got a text one day from someone. I said, do you want to watch a safe get cracked? So, you know, I would like to think any writer on earth would immediately say, yes, absolutely. Where do I go? How do I get there? You know, yeah. And that's what happened. You know, I went to an address, the garage rolled up. I walked in, the garage rolled down. It was made immediately clear to me. There were two safe crackers in the room and a safe flat on its back on the concrete. And it was just made clear to me, you can ask these gentlemen any question you want to ask them for the time it takes them to crack this safe. And after that, they're gone. So I think the first thing I asked was, do you ever get left alone? And they started laughing. They said, come on, you know, of course we get left alone all the time. We're, you know, we're vetted by the system. We're officers of the court. Anything we touch can become evidence in a trial. So of course we get left alone. And I say, okay, well, does anyone ever come back? Oh yes, of course. Yeah, people come back all the time. I had a gun pointed at me last week. Okay. Can you tell me how many times someone's pointed a gun at you? And they look at each other like, no. I said, okay. So can we say 100? They said, yeah, maybe, sure. I said, well, okay, could you please talk me through the psychology of convincing someone not to kill you? And they looked at each other as if I had finally asked an interesting question. And they told me. And that created the seed for Safe. And I went home that day and started writing.
And, I mean, in a nutshell, what is it? How do you make sure somebody doesn't kill you?
It's in the book.
by the book. Okay, I get it. Now, one of the other things that we talked about last time you were here was your interest in tacos.
Oh, goodness. Did we?
We did.
Okay.
You can tell me, are you still involved?
Am I still involved in tacos? I mean, who isn't?
No. Well,
if you live in Los Angeles, you're involved in tacos. You have to be.
But you were a little bit more involved in just eating them. So tell
absolutely.
Us that.
Yes, I was judging at the time this truly phenomenal international contest called Tacolandia, which Bill Esparza created, I guess, with the LA Weekly, which is a weekly newspaper there in Los Angeles. Unfortunately, they've since changed hands and Tacolandia no longer exists. But yeah, for 2 years, I judged the best, I guess what's termed a hybrid or new style taco. And it was a tremendous experience.
And eating all those tacos for work, does that ruin your pleasure taco eating experience?
Not at all. If anything, it broadens my horizons. And I kind of ascribe to the Japanese maxim that any brand new taste you eat is worth 40 days added to your life. So that being said, I did feel horrible shame because I grew up in a military household and we always cleaned our plates. I did feel horrible shame for not being able to eat, 25 tacos entirely. I had to just take a bite or two each time, but there's no way to do it any other way.
Yeah. Ryan, your new book doesn't come out until July.
This is true.
Can you tell us anything about it?
Am I allowed to? I think so. Yeah, it's called The System. And it's, in a way, it's a spiritual sequel to All Involved. It's set in 1993, late 93, early 94. And it deals with the changes primarily to the criminal justice system in the wake of the 6 days of the LA riots. So it's similar in that it's polyphonic. There are 12 narrators as opposed to 17 in All Involved. And yet it's really every phase of the judicial process, because it starts with a shooting. Two young men are framed for the crime. One is guilty, one is innocent. But the gang tells them both, hey, it's time for you to take your lumps. We also see the law enforcement prepare their investigation. They do the arrest. These young men go into the jail system at the same time. This creates a vacuum on the outside. And a really unlikely young gang member is elevated to a position of power in order to find out who framed them. And it proceeds from shooting to trial. And it's really deeply about justice and the ways in which the state and the criminal justice system in the United States can deliver that, and the way the street can deliver that. And it's really up to the reader to decide which he or she agrees with.
And what do you feel about the criminal justice system in the United States, particularly under Donald Trump? I mean, can he have an effect on a state level?
Oh, that's it. I feel like there are four questions in there. How do I feel? It's complicated. What can Trump do on a state level? It's reduced. However, he has given out so many federal judgeships, many of them to people who are in no way qualified to sit there, and a few who had never even done plea bargains or trials or anything of that nature. I mean, it was just absolutely terrifying. My wife is a former criminal lawyer, and it destroys her. Like, I watch her, lose faith in the law and its ability to deliver justice. And that's very difficult, because obviously she knows far more about these things than I do. It sets a tone, I guess, is the best thing to say. And then it mainly depends on, the state legislatures to elevate people accordingly, but it is pretty amazing how much it depends on getting the right people in the judges' seats.
Yeah, yeah. Now, we're told that a lot of Donald Trump's support is driven by marginalized groups, people in America that don't have a lot and that are voting for this kind of so-called strongman in politics. Mm. Where would you say the people that you deal with, these gang members, the poor of Los Angeles, the driven of Los Angeles?
Former gang members.
Where would their political allegiance lie?
It depends. I mean, I've been really surprised. It spans. I spend time with, former gang members who are also vets, a number of whom still support Trump and believe in this idea of fake news, and we have very difficult conversations, I think, as a result of that. Yet, I have a number of very close acquaintances who have helped with research from the very beginning, who have since left the gangs, and they have families, and they are consumed, I think, with anger, almost every day, primarily because of the border policies, the ICE policies, the private prisons. I mean, it's I think, oddly enough, I think they're able to look at it in a far more holistic way, but also feel tremendously targeted, being Latinos. And the good news is, I think California is one of the few states really fighting, and taking legal action, it seems, almost every week against the Trump administration. However, as as ICE has proven on many an occasion, you know, they're still going to go in and do whatever they want, especially if they can trick people during raids. But I, as I said, I'm also doing research in Louisiana, and a lot of that has been with former gang members as well as police officers and sheriffs. And so that is also an entirely different gumbo. Of course, I go for a food reference, right? I just couldn't help it. And I've had a number of really difficult, but I think very vital talks with former sheriffs who believe so deeply in law and order and yet still support Trump. And all I try to do is occasionally say, look, you know, it doesn't quite work that way. Or what do you think about the wrongdoing that has been proven in court? And that's when I think the conversation gets very real.
Yeah. You talk about former gang members, and I wonder how easy it is to leave a gang.
I would say it's not easy. There's absolutely a spiritual cost. There's often an emotional, psychological, and physical cost to it. The folks whom I know who have been able to successfully leave are able to do so because they did, you know, what's called paying their dues, which means they did any number of things that they were asked to do when they were active. Now, they haven't told me what those things are, and I certainly won't ask. But a number of them, I think it's safe to say, and they cared very deeply about atoning now. And it's one of the reasons why I wrote Safe the way I wrote Safe. You know, it was one thing to have interviewed an awful lot of folks, roughly 24 people, who were in their teens at the time of All Involved in 1992, and they were making bad decisions and doing reckless things. And yes, it was criminal as well. But I was interviewing people who were in their 40s, who had families, who had regrets about that time. So I think I really kind of took that on as well. And by the time it you know, I was ready to write Safe, I knew that I needed to capture that. You know, that striving for redemption and in whatever way to make up for what had been done.
Fascinating books, both of them, All Involved and Safe. Does the new one have a title?
The System.
The System. Look out for it. It's coming out in July. It's by Ryan Gattis. Thank you so much for coming on to talk to me. We're bringing this interview to a close because you've told me as my reward for it, I should be allowed to see your full body tattoos.
Totally fair.
To go now because that's what we're going to do. You've been listening to Monocle Reads. I'm Georgina Godwin. Many thanks to our studio manager, Steph Chungu, and our researchers, Giacomo Harper and Nick Toomey. You can hear this programme again or indeed our full version, Meet the Writers, in which you can also find our archive programme with Ryan online. Just head over to our website.